Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. Lee, this is going to be a marvelous segment. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Vice President with Exit Planning Institute, Mr. Scott Snyder. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing well. Scott, before we get really deep into this, can you talk a little bit about Exit Planning Institute? What are you doing for folks?
Sure. So Exit Planning Institute is a global educational company. We provide education and training, advisor development and practice support, and owner-facing education as well, primarily to business advisors across the United States. So we have 600 advisors in our network. They're called CEPAs, or Certified Exit Planning Advisors. And we're technically actually in 13 different, but we're primarily an educational company serving the needs of professional advisors.
So these professional advisors, their clients are typically people who are exiting their business. Is that who they serve?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that their typical clientele is a baby boomer business owner, usually in the lower middle market. And the way we define lower middle market is anywhere between $5 million in revenue, probably up to about $100 million in revenue. And those clients for us, our certified exit planning advisors, are folks like accountants, attorneys, wealth managers, bankers, and kind of anywhere in between, right? So anybody that's kind of what we call operating in that exit planning ecosystem, that's really helping a business owner transition their business and kind of walk in the next into the next act of their life.
And then what's your role at the Institute?
Sure. I am the vice president here at EPI. So primarily, my role is two things. I'm in charge of the operations of the company and in charge of implementing our strategic growth. So EPI is actually owned by a company. Talk about exit planning, right? We're a family business. So me and my father own a company called Snyder Premier Growth. And him and I own about 8 different companies together. Now, one of them, and really the heartbeat of our organization, is the Exit Planning Institute. So really an operational role here for me. And then if I'm not doing that, I'm really focused on really building, building our business and supporting the work of our certified exit planning advisors in the marketplace.
Now, what is a kind of hole in the swing of a typical exit planner who is not involved with your institute?
What does a non-advisor look like?
What are some of the services you're providing to advisors that are part of the institute that maybe somebody who isn't part of the institute is lacking?
Sure. Yeah. So most of the clientele are coming to us because most of their clients who are business owners, right, are asking them for the first time. Okay, look, you've been my accountant for the past 30 years. And now I'm probably, likely in my mid-60s if I'm kind of a typical baby boomer client. And I'm looking at starting to transition to my business. So they come to the accountant for their advice. Or usually, if you look at some of our research that EPI conducts, it usually shows that the CPA is the number one most trusted advisor. And funny enough, they're twice as much than the owner's spouse. Kind of a funny name. But they're usually coming to EPI because for the first time, they know if you took an accounting firm, right, they know audit, they know tax, they know, they know value, but they might not really understand how to successfully help their client transition their business. So they come to EPI primarily for education and training. Once they come through our programs, you can think of it as a membership or a license. They have a license or a membership to take some of our materials, our marketing systems, our delivery tools, and our resources, and help them build their exit planning practice.
And then, what's an example of some of the resources you would provide somebody?
Sure. So it's really, if you look at it, it's really breaks down in two different levels. So a couple of the biggest hurdles that exit planners of any kind, I think, have are one, general awareness, right? So if you and I are talking to a business owner and we talk about life insurance, it's probably likely that owner knows what life insurance is. We talk to them about an investment strategy, that's likely that they can understand real estate, business, stocks, so on and so forth. It's probably unlikely that they really understand the true value of what exit planning can do for them. So one of the biggest tools we provide our professional advisors our owner engaging solutions. So anything from sample blog posts to supporting their social media or their email campaigns. And primarily what we see that works well with business owners is in-person education. So we're helping them, we help support them in their doing owner roundtables or owner focus groups or doing larger scale owners forums. So that's one side. So owner engagement tools. On the flip side, we have to deliver the work. As if you're going to do evaluation, you're going to deliver them evaluation on that business. For exit planning, there's a whole diagnostic that we'll do. There's a whole project management system that we have. And all kinds of different educational tools along the way that help support that work. So if you think about it, you can think about it in two ways. One, owner engagement solutions, and two, client delivery solutions.
Now, when you're working with a CPA that isn't that knowledgeable about this side of their business, and you're kind of getting them up to speed and giving them tools to, you know, kind of serve their clients in maybe a slightly different way than they've been used to serving them, what's the challenge for you? Like, are you know, like CPAs, for example, maybe they're not the best salespeople, and then you're asking them to kind of do this salesy kind of education strategy to get in front of these people to move them into this new service. Is that a challenge?
Sure. Yeah, it is absolutely the challenge, right? So I think it's twofold, right? So if you kind of look at each year, EPI comes out with another theme, and we take the year to really roll out that theme. So last year, it's funny that you ask, because last year we saw this similar question that you're saying, right? Is we saw it last year. So we built our theme around it. So we came out with a theme called the advisor of the future. So if you kind of look over the next 5 to 10 years from our data, about 67% of business owners, baby boomer business owners, I should say, are indicating that they want to transition their business in the next 5 years. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, for the first time, these accountants, to take that group as an example, are frankly being asked to be a little bit more entrepreneurial,
right,
than they probably have been in the past.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, you know, usually a valuation or an insurance policy or an audit or something that specifically an accountant might do is triggered by something. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they're not necessarily, owners are starting to think about wanting to transition their business and harvest the value out of their business, but they're not necessarily ready yet. But so you're asking, to your point, not only are you asking them to be a little bit more salesy in function, but a little bit more entrepreneurial, because they kind of have to change their style a little bit and work on something that not only incorporates the owner from a business standpoint, so professional, but you're asking them to also do a little bit more intimate workings in their personal life as well, right? Because the two correlate. So it really comes down to good training and then a good network. So certainly I would challenge that EPI, as it relates to value acceleration and exit planning, has some of the best content and training in the industry today. But I would also say that's supported by a really cool network of individuals and advisors. So we're providing them with the education and training so that they're comfortable working with these owners. But we're also supporting them in what we call chapters, or really what their function is practice groups. So once they come out of our programs, they enter into the marketplace, and we have 25 chapters across the United States that act really more as practice groups. So they help drive best practices, they further education, they work with colleges and universities and research, and they help, and they do owner-facing programs. So they're not kind of going at it alone, they're going at it as a collaborative team.
Now, the chapters that are around the country or around the world, I guess, now they are just these individual CPAs, or the people that are in professional services that serve this ecosystem, are they typically the kind of mom and pop firms, or are they like part of large consultancies?
That's a great question. And one of the things I like best about EPI is the diversity. So number one, you're going to see in any given practice group or chapter in the United States that we have, you'll probably at any given morning meeting or evening event or educational program that they host, you'll see a collaborative team of honestly maybe 6 to 8 different disciplines, anywhere from a more traditional advisor, like an accountant, an attorney, a banker, a wealth manager, all the way, believe it or not, to a physician or a life coach. So anywhere that's helping an owner transition, and not only transition to harvest value, but also transition to the next stage of their life. So one, it's pretty diverse. As it relates to firm, it is. Some of it's more mom and pop-ish. Some it's smaller firms, 2 to 3 person firms. But we also have some of the big national firms as well, like BNY Mellon or US Trust. or Leading Edge Alliance, which is an association that represents multiple accounting firms. So we have some of the big guys there, and then we also have some of the smaller guys there as well. So I would say that generally there's no solid answer there. It's a really good, diverse group. And I think they all learn, from each other when they're operating in these local kind of marketplaces.
Now, is your role as kind of the owners of the Institute, is it you're helping fill the chapters, or is each chapter its own kind of business that they're getting sponsors and they're doing the work in that individual market?
Sure, that's another great question. So, I would say that they are all just an extension of EPI Global in the local marketplace, right? So we have a person in our office here, which is headquartered in Cleveland, Ohio, that supports those chapters. We actually have a couple people that their dedicated role is to really help support those chapters. What we're trying to do is let the advisors really be two things. One, it acts as a business development tool for them. So they, they get to meet with 30 or 40 different individuals once a month, to kind of build their network, their collaborative team, and they get to work with other, the media, they get to work with the colleges and universities, and then the business owners themselves. But I will say, and if you're talking to any of the chapter presidents that kind of run these chapters for EPI and for themselves, that it is no doubt a grassroots effort. It's interesting. Chris and I, our interesting backstory is Chris, my father and business partner, were members of EPI actually before we were owners. So we owned a consulting firm that did value growth and exit planning for business owners. Chris was certified by EPI in 2008. And then in 2012, the founders of EPI, Peter Crisman and Rich Jackham, were looking to execute their own exit. And Chris and I bought EPI from them in October of 2012. I mentioned that because Chris and I here in Northeast Ohio started the very first chapter of EPI. And now that's has kind of grown to 2025. But it's interesting for me, chapters have been near and dear to my heart from the time that me and Chris wanted to use it as a business development tool and a best practices driver, all the way to see the chapter presidents now. So I will say the chapter presidents it's a very much a grassroots effort too, right? To drive local awareness. There's only so much that we can do to support them from the national office. There's definitely some grassroots efforts that they do locally, and they're pretty significant efforts. And produce some pretty significant results. It's very cool once you see the inner workings of the chapters.
Now, and then does each chapter have its own rhythm, or you have kind of a standard, okay, there's a monthly meeting and you create the editorial calendar, like this month we're going to talk about, family-owned business exits, or
yeah,
like
we
who's
try to
driving
let them
that?
Be as entrepreneurial as I would say as possible, right? We want them to really make the chapter their own, but at the same time, we have to provide some structure, and it's probably best that we provide some structure so that we can kind of keep everything. We're not always recreating the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
So primarily function of the chapter is education. So they on their most of them, I would say if we have 25 chapters, 20 of them are doing 12 meetings a year. Usually they're to be perfectly honest, they're probably doing 10. They're probably taking a summer month off, and they're probably doing like a December holiday party collaboration, and they're collaborating with other groups in their region. So there might be three or five people that host a big kind of holiday party. But for the most part, they're doing anywhere between 10 and 12 educational meetings a year, and they get to really pick from three buckets, right? So one, EPI certainly issues a national curriculum each year that they can choose from just great topics that are of interest to advisors and owners that they can insert their own local professional there. Or we also have kind of a national speakers bureau that of folks that we can bring in for them if they choose to go that route. Two, they have their own bucket of information. What's nice about having 25 chapters now, all doing about give or take, 10 meetings a year, is that all those meetings are archived. And so if you're in New York City and you're thinking, I really want to do something around the analysis of a buy sell agreement. And I saw that they did that in Orange County, California. So I'm going to take that, replicate it with my own local panel here in New York City. So they have access to that. And then last, to your point, it's a little bit of creativity. They have their own rhythm. They have their own local needs. I was just talking to somebody in LA, and they were talking about owner transition. And they were saying that the city of Los Angeles, one of their big things as it relates to transition is that what they're seeing is LA businesses, larger manufacturing businesses, are being bought by multinational firms. And that the multinational firm is closing the manufacturing facility in LA and moving it elsewhere in the United States or somewhere overseas. And so what they're saying as it relates to transition locally for them, one of their big issues is unemployment rates. So, you know, you have a 50-person, 100-person, 150-person manufacturing firm that's a high-quality business, sells to a multinational, but then changes locations. Those folks are out of jobs. So the city of Los Angeles, from what I'm aware of, is building programs to incentivize business owners to sell to local companies. So point being in that discussion is that local LA, greater LA chapter is addressing some of those unique issues as it relates to owner transition in their local market.
Now, in a local market, if there's a topic, I, as a institute member, can then go and invite my clients or prospective clients to go there for education. That's how I would leverage it as a biz dev tool.
Yeah, absolutely. That's certainly one way you can leverage it. I think a lot of the advisors are saying, look, again, awareness being a big hurdle that owners have, right? It's not that owners aren't scared of transitioning their business. Every owner knows I'm an owner. I know that I'm transitioning my business. In fact, I want to transition my business because 80% of my wealth is trapped in my business. So it's not afraid of transition. What I think most owners are afraid of is the unknown, is that they don't know how to do it. It seems complicated. You know, it's family, it's management, it's me. I don't know what I want to do next after I do this thing. So they're nervous about the overall process. So what advisors utilize chapter meetings for is, you're exactly right, is that, you know, come to me, Mr. Business Owner, come with me to this meeting and this group that I'm a part of that focuses on transition. And we're going to talk about buy-sell agreements, or we might talk about an introductory to private equity, or we might talk about strategic and value enhancement products or processes, or we might talk about estate planning. So it's a great place for, I think, advisors to bring their business owner clients to begin the educational process as they kind of walk through this path of transition, for sure. They're also doing some other larger scale events in each local marketplace that really involve helping business owners understand three things. One, how attractive their business is in the current marketplace, how ready their business is for transition, and then how prepared they are personally as owners for transition as well. So our chapters conduct some of that kind of research and analysis for their owners. And then they follow those by what we call national owner forums. So there's about a dozen different owners forums going on in the second half of this year in all kinds of different cities across the United States, where these advisors, now that they benchmark their owners, are taking a step further to help the education process and to really help them trigger action and take action, right? Because it's all about results, right? We need results and we need to start to build value.
Now, is one of your challenges is to attract more professionals to the individual chapters or grow more chapters? What are some of the things you need more of?
Sure. I think that, you know, it goes back to awareness, right? And so if you know, there's anybody listening today that's a certified financial planner or works with CFPs, we're kind of like certified financial planners back in the 80s, right? When they were kind of forming their organization. And so nowadays, if you look at the CFP board, I think they have something around 75 or 80,000 CFPs in the United States.
Wow.
If you look at CPAs, there's about 660,000 CPAs in the United States today. Well, if you look at exit planners, there's only 600 of us. If you took EPI's competitors, so there's three organizations, including EPI, that certify people in exit planning and support and train them and so on and so forth. If you took all three organizations, combine us up to people certified in exit planning, that only swells to about 1,500 people. So one of the reasons that's attracted me to this industry is if you're familiar with Blue Ocean Strategy, right? It's a very untapped marketplace. I think the people that I represent, the certified exit planning advisors that are my clients, are some of the most pioneering and entrepreneurial advisors I've ever worked with. I mentioned that because I think for me, leading a national or global institute, our biggest challenge, whether it's working with advisors or working with owners, is awareness, right? So even though we might only have 600 certified exit planning advisors across the United States, we do work with thousands of advisors each month through our chapters, because not everybody's a SEPA, right? But you might get 50 to 60 to 80 people, or maybe 30 or 40 at a chapter meeting. So one, general awareness. And general awareness to really result in collaboration amongst advisors, right? Because in my opinion, exit planning is not a competition. Exit planning is a community. So I think our biggest challenge is awareness about what exit planning really is, and then the importance of collaboration amongst advisors.
Now, as an individual business, like part of what your role is also is to provide leads and opportunities to serve that group that are people who are exiting or considering exiting at some point. Mm-hmm. So you want your clients to get clients, right? You're the client's client strategy also.
Well,
what age should, or what stage, when do they start? When does somebody start thinking about exit planning?
Sure. That is a great question. I was just on a online course I was teaching right before I tuned in with you guys, and we were talking about timing issues. And it's very interesting, right? Because I think most owners believe that they can time the market, right? So when you're looking at timing, we really look at it in three ways. One, there's personal timing. So as you get older, your energy level drops. It's just a matter of fact. And two, you can look at the business, right? So your business goes in cycles. And then you look at the private capital market. So what is the marketplace like? And if you looked at that timing chart, you'd see probably just a roller coaster ride. You probably can't time the market. And so typically, if I really wanted to work with a client, if there's business owners listening today, I would say one of the issues that we have as business owners is that we look at exit planning in really a 6 to 12 to maybe 18 month time frame, right? Is okay, it's the middle of 2017. I think I want to exit by January 1st of 2019, I probably should get busy kind of quote unquote prepping my business, right? And I always call it just, you know, you're basically going to, if you only leave 6 to 18 months for transition, you're just throwing makeup on a pig. That's right. All you're going to do. And so what we want is we really want a 3 to 7 year advanced cycle, because what we're trying to say, and if you're kind of listening, listening to how we teach exit planning, is that I would challenge any advisor and any business owner to think as exit planning, not as exit planning, but as just simple good business strategy. I would challenge that we as owners are doing stuff in our business every single day that relates some way, shape, or form to the transition of our business, right? And so we try to bring exit planning from something that you do in the future to something that you do right now. So we bring it into the present. And so I would say that I'm 31 years old. And I'm already planning for my exit, right? My dad, who's 57, give or take, years old, has been planning for his exit. If you talk to him on the phone, he'd probably say he's been planning for his exit since I've been up to his knee, right? I've always been.
Since he saw you were good at math.
Yeah, right. Right. He's like, this guy is, I don't know if I'm good at math. That'd be a funny conversation to have with a good old dad. But I would say that certainly from a standpoint of operationally, he's like, this guy's a little creative, I think. I think we could mold this guy right into a businessman. So, but I would say in all seriousness, a good exit strategy, something where you can concentrate on really three things, right? Can we maximize the value of our business and minimize the tax obligations that we have? Can we plan personally financially, right? Am I going to have enough money to do what I want to do in the next act of my life? And then what is that next act of my life, right? I think the hardest thing for owners to plan on is what's next. So if you're talking to a baby boomer business owner, you might have started your business, you might have bought your business, you might have worked in your business for 60 hours a week or more for the past 20, 30, or 40 years. When that business goes away, that's a different style, that's a different lifestyle that you'll have. And frankly, you have a lot of life left, right? You might have 40, 50 years left, 30 years left. What are you going to do when you don't have to go into the office every day, or you don't have to think strategically, right? What are we going to do? We probably can do other stuff, community, charity, own other businesses, real estate, right? There's many things that owners will do post-transition. But to properly plan in those three buckets, you have to leave time. And so I would say, ideally, I'd like 3 years. I would say at most, we're looking at 3 to 7. But in today's world, to be honest with you, owners are still thinking about transitioning. When they think about transitioning their business, I would think that most advisors say they're coming to me with a pretty limited time frame. They're like 6, 12, 24, or 12 or maybe 24 months away.
But it sounds to me that you're saying, though, is that you can't do this too early, that this is something that you should at least be getting some information today, even if you're not ready to act for several years.
Absolutely right. 100% agree. Yeah, I would say that, again, according to some of the data and research that we do, when we ask owners if they've completed, if the answer, they said yes or no, have you completed any formal education around exit strategy or value acceleration and transitioning your company? And like 75%, give or take, of the owners responded no. So the first step in the process, we have to get educated, right? And so, again, education might take some time. And so once we're educated, we can understand what exit planning really is and what it can do, then we can start to assess and identify our value and really start to go from knowing our value, right? I would say business owners probably have an idea of their value, so they know what value is, or they know what their value is. I would challenge that they actually understand their value. Then once we can understand value, right, we can move to protect, build, and harvest value. So now we can start actively working on the transition of our business, both from a business side and a personal side, right? Then we can move into the final stages, which is extract value and understanding what our transition options are. So yeah, I would say to your point, if you're a baby boomer business owner listening in, I would challenge that we should start focusing on the transition of our business now, because frankly, if you're doing it now, you're already going to reap some benefits. Value will go up. Net profit and income probably will go up. You'll have a more sound financial plan. You'll engage your management better. You'll create a better rhythm in company culture. I think there's immense benefits from actually bringing exit planning from something you do in the future to something that you do right now. So yeah, it takes some time.
Now, part of this exercise to me would be managing the expectations of the owner. While sometimes they might have a feeling of what the value is, sometimes they could be off. How do you kind of help them, or maybe you can share some mistakes that people who are just kind of learning about this for the first time that they make when they're doing this kind of exit planning?
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I as an owner myself, you sometimes fall subject to it. There's no doubt that, and everybody probably knows about the value gap, right? So I think my business is worth $10 million because I played some golf with some buddies and my buddy got $10 million. Or I believe from looking at some stuff that I saw in one of the business publications that these kind of manufacturing businesses are going for 5x EBITDA or 2x revenue. So I think that, and that creates a value gap, because what happens when you actually do a diagnostic and an analysis of your business, you thought it was worth 10. And it's actually only worth 6. So you have a $4 million value gap. And the question becomes, well, how do I get to 10 million? Because I want 10 million. Or I need 10 million to sustain my lifestyle in quote unquote retirement or the next act of my life. So I think that it all starts with really a good analysis. So I think that, obviously a business valuation is something we should be doing at least every other year, in my opinion, is really understanding the value of our business formally. One of the things I think that's missed for owners is this diagnostic, right? So there's a ton of intangible factors that really relate to your value. And I would say that being a buyer of businesses myself, I would say that a business is only worth, I don't really care what your valuation is, a business is only worth what a buyer is willing to pay for it. And so there is some valuation stuff that we need to know that is more formal and based on the numbers. Then as I stack up against other businesses, I want to know about the intangible factors. So there's many, for a certified exit planning advisor, for example, would be able to go in and do this kind of interview style analysis and take you through maybe give or take 20 different categories of value. And you might talk to them through 100 or 200 questions. And so to simplify it, you're going to come out with an analysis that shows very different, a very wide range of different intangible factors, people, structural capital, so your processes, your documentation, your human capital, your people, your talent, your HR, your social capital, so your culture and your rhythm and your reporting, and then your customer capital, right? You're going to look at your customers, your sales and marketing. So we're gonna basically rank those and rate those. And we're going to come out with a report that's red, yellow, and green. So green is the stuff you're good at, yellow is the stuff that we need improvement on, and red is the stuff that we're falling below the line and we need to work on. If we can get, the more we can get up to the green, the higher the value of our business is going to be. Because not only do we have a strong P&L, but we'll also get a higher multiple because some of the intangible factors are very strong. So if I'm looking at a business, right, and the business is doing $300,000. Mm-hmm. And I have business A that's doing $300,000, business B that's doing $300,000. Well, when you look at the intangibles, now business A is doing, they're doing good money. They have good money, but they don't have really good people. So if the owner leaves, are those people capable of really running this business? They have pretty weak marketing. and they don't have a lot of documentation. So if I have to take over any kind of processes or anything, am I going to be able to easily be taught those? Because none of them are really documented, but they're doing well. They're doing 300 grand in EBITDA. On the flip side, we have business B, also doing 300 grand. However, they have the documentation, they have good talent, and they have a succession plan for that talent. So they probably ranked higher. So they might get a higher multiple. So I might pay, just to throw out numbers, I might pay 2x300 grand for business A. But given they're doing the same amount of money, but this one seems a little bit more foundationally sound, and the owner seems a little bit more personally prepared, knows what's going on, understands what he wants to do next, I might pay 3x to 4x that other business, because I'm probably setting myself up for success by buying the more prepared business versus the less prepared business, even though they might be having the same EBITDA.
And that's the benefit of working with somebody who's part of your institute, right? They're going to be more schooled in helping their clients get the most out of their business. That's part of why you're working with them, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. A certified exit planning advisor, a CEPA, is going to be able to, help an owner do that. Right. And so not only they might be the exact ones for you. And if they're not the exact ones for you, they usually have a pretty robust network of people that they can work with as well. So CEPAs usually come in collaborative teams, but bottom line, yes, that's exactly the work that our clientele does.
Now, do you guys have a chapter here in Georgia? That's where we're based.
Yeah, we have frankly, one of my favorite chapters, right in Atlanta, Georgia. And they're out of 25 or so chapters, they're probably one of 10 that's one of the most significant chapters that we have. And so Steve Capizzi, who's our chapter president there, actually, is doing so well that he's actually up for, we run an Excellence in Exit Planning Awards. It was just announced that Steve is up for Member of the Year this year. So Steve and his group, and there's about maybe a dozen certified exit planning advisors in the Atlanta, Georgia area. Steve and his group are doing two things. So they're conducting some research called the State of Owner Readiness Survey.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're an advisor listening, I would suggest just taking a look at it. You can go to www.ownerreadiness.com. So ownerreadiness.com. If you're an owner and you're looking to benchmark yourself and understand a little bit more about your business, you can take that survey there. And then they're going to follow that up with one of these educational events called an owner's forum. So Steve and his team do monthly meetings. I was actually just down there speaking at his monthly meeting a couple of months ago. And then they also are a little bit more robust from the standpoint of they're really trying to kind of trailblaze that marketplace in Atlanta as far as exit planning and value acceleration go, and really try to help owners.
Well, maybe this is something that we can start working with you guys and letting them come on and talk about what's happening in the exit planning world.
Yeah, I would love that. I think that you'll find that they're certainly experts in their fields, but I think they go beyond just being an expert. They kind of venture into being like a thought leader, right? I think a thought leader kind of influences, kind of take risks, kind of takes a stand, and what you'll find is that it's pretty diverse. So anything that might be inside of that exit planning ecosystem, I think you'll find a pretty high caliber advisor that can help educate owners or collaborate with advisors for sure.
Stone talking here. I think that sounds like a marvelous idea. Scott, where can our listeners go to learn more about what you guys are doing, have a conversation with you or a local chapter person? What's the best way for them to reach out and talk to somebody?
Sure. You could just go to earncepa.com. So that's Earn CEPA, Certified Exit Planning Advisor. So earncepa.com. And you can check everything out there. That'll take you right to our website. You can check everything out there. And if you're looking, like I said before, about some of the benchmarking stuff, ownerreadiness.com.
And if you're a business owner that wants to kind of connect with somebody who's in the exit planning world, is there a website for that person?
Sure. You can go to exit-planning-institute.org.
Well, Scott, it has been an absolute delight having you join us this afternoon. This has been a lot of fun, very informative. And this idea of sitting down with local CEPAs here closer to our studio and maybe in some other markets as well, that's quite sincere. So we may talk about that offline, but keep up the good work, man.
I appreciate that, guys. I really appreciate having me here today. And yeah, I look forward to working with you in the future, and we'll have to catch up next time I'm in Atlanta.
You got it. All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest this afternoon with Exit Planning Institute, Vice President Mr. Scott Snyder, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.